Hello, and welcome to the For 91 Days podcast. We're Mike and Jürgen. In 2010, we embarked on a new kind of lifestyle, traveling the world for 91 days at a time. Every 3 months, we'll pack up our bags and move to a new city, country, or continent. The idea is to travel slow and really get to know a place before moving on. 3 months gives us enough time to explore every facet of our new homes, from the history, people, and landmarks, to the cuisine and culture. And we document everything exhaustively on our blog, 491days.com, where we've published over 2,000 articles over the years. Now, we're exploring a new format to tell our travel stories, a podcast. So, put on your headphones, sit back, and let us take you on a journey. We're starting this series with our time in Savannah, Georgia. We spent 91 days exploring and learning about this jewel of the U.S. South, visiting the most iconic sites, getting to know the famously eccentric locals, and exploring the region. Whether you've already visited Savannah or are thinking about a trip, we think you'll love hearing about our experiences in this beautiful and historic city. The road to Savannah. At 3 p.m. on a brisk November afternoon, Jürgen and I parked a smashed-up car in front of our new Savannah home and pulled our exhausted bodies up the front steps. We had arrived after a whirlwind trip that had brought us from Oviedo to Madrid, Chicago, Denver, Ohio, Kentucky, and finally southeastern Georgia. And our dog, Chucky, had come with us. The flight from Madrid to Chicago had been long, and she had surely spent every minute howling in the dark solitude of the cargo bay. When her crate arrived into Chicago Customs, I picked her up for hugs and kisses, realizing too late that she was covered in puke. There's no evidence for it, but I've convinced myself that she must have vomited at the very end of the flight and that she didn't spend 10 terrifying, turbulent hours rolling around in her own mess. My parents let us borrow their car for the trip from Kentucky to Savannah. I repaid that small kindness by backing into the fire hydrant across the street from their house, ripping the bumper off and putting a hideous gash into the side of the car. A great way to start off our new 91-day adventure. Otherwise, the drive went smoothly, and we were soon installed in our new home, anxious to get out and explore the city. It had been 10 years since I lived in the USA, and neither Jürgen nor I had never spent much time in the South. This was surely going to be a fascinating 3 months. First impressions of Savannah. Our first full day in Savannah was warm and overcast. Luckily, the rain held off and we were able to spend the afternoon getting familiar with the city that would be our home for the next few months. Our landlord had offered to let us make use of a couple old, rickety bikes he had in storage. We wobbled into town, unsure the ancient contraptions weren't going to fall apart, but comfortably inconspicuous. A sleek mountain bike would be out of place in this eccentric, slow-moving city. But ambling along the wide streets on these quirky old things, we fit right in. Over the course of the day, I gathered the same impressions of Savannah which must strike every newcomer to the city. The haunting beauty of the Spanish Moss, the crowded riverside promenade with its shops and tour boats, the incredible Victorian architecture, the parks and squares with their monuments to Savannah's rich history, the looming mansions, which always evince an air of mystery. And I don't mean one or two foreboding old mansions. Savannah must have hundreds. Biking around them was enough to send shivers down my spine, especially on a dreary day. It's no coincidence that the city is home to so many ghost stories. But what impressed us most of all was the people and the relaxed way of life which reigns here. Nearly everyone we encountered was smiling, happy to stop and chat. Savannah boasts an eclectic populace, with proper society-type ladies sharing the squares and sidewalks with panhandlers and flannel-clad students. It's an old city, but one with a vital infusion of youth that keeps things fresh. Thanks to SCAD, the Savannah College of Art and Design, Savannah might have a higher percentage of hipsters than Brooklyn. This initial tour was fascinating, and by the time we returned to our own foreboding old mansion just off Abercorn, I knew that we had made a great decision in coming here. Savannah is stunning at first glance, but the city's true beauty lies in its depth, its history, secrets, and legends. Our 91 days was already ticking down, and I could hardly wait to get back out there and start exploring. Forsyth Park. Occupying 30 acres between Drayton and Whitaker Street, Forsyth is Savannah's answer to New York's Central Park. It's not as massive as its counterpart, but blends seamlessly into the city and has always formed a part of its identity. Forsyth Park was built in the 1840s and christened in honor of John Forsyth, a former statesman and Georgian governor. The park's massive central fountain, crowned with a female figure and flanked by spitting geese, was inspired by the fountain in Paris's Plaza de la Concorde. With water shooting haphazardly in all directions, it's one of the most recognizable landmarks of Savannah, appearing in films like 1962's Cape Fear and Midnight in the Garden of Good and Evil. Three monuments in Forsyth Park commemorate Savannah's contribution to American wars. To the north, there's one for the Vietnam War. An impressively large memorial to the Civil War's Confederate dead is in the park's center with the biblical inscription, "Come from the four winds, O breath, and breathe upon these slain, that they may live." And at the southern end is an interesting tribute to the Spanish-American War, in which the U.S. helped liberate Cuba, Puerto Rico, the Philippines, and Guam from Spanish influence. Though the northern third of the park is shaded and tree-filled, the rest is wide open, with flat lawns that host weekend picnics and pickup sports. There's a cafe, a visitor center, and an open-air stage for summer concerts, as well as something I'd never heard of before, a fragrant garden for the blind. The gate was locked, but I stuck my nose through the bars and took a long whiff. It smelled of trash and roses. During our first few days in Savannah, we had already crossed through Forsyth Park multiple times. Practically an extended pedestrian-only section of Bull Street, it's as much a thoroughfare as a destination, and I had a feeling we'd be getting to know the park intimately. The 24 Squares of Savannah. At the time of its founding in 1733, Savannah was the first North American city planned around public squares. General Oglethorpe's grand design for his new capital called for four squares to serve as gardens and meeting areas. The western and eastern sides of each square were reserved for public buildings, such as churches and government offices, while the northern and southern ends were for private residences, called tithing blocks. Savannah was the original capital of Georgia, the last of the original 13 colonies, and its logical design won it fame around the world. The plan was far-sighted, allowing for over a century of growth, always replicating the square system further outward. By the mid-19th century, there were a total of 24. From the largest, Johnson, to the smallest, Crawford, each of Savannah's 24 squares has its own history and personality. We made a promise to fully explore each of them during our 3 months here and learn their stories and secrets. It was a promise we kept. Johnson Square. We had 24 squares to explore during our time in Savannah and decided to start with the oldest and largest. Johnson Square was established in 1733 and named in honor of South Carolina's colonial governor, Robert Johnson. The most notable monument in Johnson Square is a 50-foot white obelisk dedicated to Nathaniel Greene, the Revolutionary War hero from Rhode Island who retired to a farm near Savannah. His remains, along with those of his son, are buried underneath the obelisk. Johnson Square also features two identical fountains and a sundial dedicated to the memory of William Bull, who helped General Oglethorpe both choose Savannah's location and design its unique layout. The time was off a little when we visited, but ancient sundials can't be expected to cope with daylight savings. Another monument is the Johnny Mercer Bench, which honors the city's best-known musical artist. Ever since Savannah's inception, Johnson Square has been the center of city life. In the very early days, this is where colonists would meet to check the time, fetch water, make use of public ovens, and congregate for worship. The Christ Church, found on the eastern side of the square, is known as the Mother Church of Georgia. Built in 1773, it's the oldest in all of Georgia. We hope you're enjoying our stories from Savannah. If so, please subscribe to our podcast so you don't miss any episodes, And of course, you can read all about this amazing city and admire photos on our blog, savannah.for91days.com.